Casualties rise as Palestinians rally against Israeli forces following assault on Al-Aqsa Mosque, the Muslims' third holiest site. Yemen says Saudi-led coalition is still continuing to violate the terms of a UN-brokered ceasefire by seizing fuel ships and obstructing the flights. Plus, Russia warns the United States of unpredictable consequences if Washington keeps arming Ukraine. Thank you for joining us. Palestinians have rallied in the Gaza Strip to protest Israeli crackdown in the occupied Al-Quds. The rally comes amid a surge in Israeli violations against the holy city. The Palestinian Red Crescent says more than 340 Palestinians have been injured in Israeli attacks across the West Bank. Ashraf Shannon brings us more in the following report from Gaza.
People in the besieged Gaza Strip held a rally following the Friday prayers to express their solidarity with Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Angry protesters shouted slogans against the Israeli regime and vowing to sacrifice their lives for the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Earlier, the Israeli regime forces stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Old City of Al-Quds, injuring more than 150 worshippers during the second Friday of the fasting holy month of Ramadan. Hamas movement has warned the Israeli regime against violations at Al-Aqsa Mosque.
We are prepared to wage wars for the sake of Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. We will continue to the equation of arms for arms and blood for blood, and that Al-Quds is a red line that must not be crossed. The Israeli occupation will bear full responsibility for any repercussions as a result of its attacks against the worshippers. We are ready for all scenarios to stop this enemy and protect our people.
Protesters in the Gaza Strip vow to increase their solidarity with Al-Quds until the removal of all Israeli violations in the holy city.
The Palestinian people are united for the sake of Al-Quds, and we will not abandon Al-Aqsa Mosque. We will fight for the sake of Al-Quds and sacrifice our lives for it.
The Israeli regime has stepped up its deadly acts of aggression in Al-Quds since the beginning of Ramadan. Palestinian resistance factions warned the Israeli regime of dire consequences if Israeli forces continue to attack Al-Quds.
This rally is sending a clear message to the Zionist enemy that it must understand that we will not sit idle while it attacks Al-Quds. The Zionist enemy is playing with fire, and it will only explode in its face.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque is Islam's third holiest site and has been under Israeli occupation since 1967.
Palestinians in the besieged coastal enclave say that they will use all forms of resistance against the Israeli occupation until the liberation of Al-Quds. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Iran's foreign minister has strongly condemned the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque by the Israeli regime. He says the developments unfolding in a Muslim's third holiest site show that the Palestinian resistance is alive and thriving, and Israel is in a state of desperation. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comments during a phone call with Ismail Haniya, the head of the political bureau of the Hamas resistance movement. Amir Abdullahian said the resistance is now at its peak, while the Israeli regime has never been weaker. He said Iran supports the establishment of an integrated Palestinian state across the historical territories, with Al-Quds as its capital. The top Iranian diplomat said the raid on Palestinian worshippers is one of the adverse consequences of a handful of Arab countries normalizing ties with the regime. For his part, Haniyeh said the Palestinians have two options before them: submission to the Judaization of the Al-Aqsa Mosque or resistance against Israel. They have chosen the latter, he said. Reactions are pouring in following a surge in Israeli violations against Palestinians in the occupied Al-Quds. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation has called on the international community to put an end to the repeated Israeli aggression. Iraq has also condemned the high rate of violence in the Palestinian territories and the expansion of Israeli operations in Palestinian cities and villages. Saudi Arabia has slammed the Israeli attacks, saying the international community must hold Tel Aviv accountable. Also, the U.S. is urging all sides to exercise restraint and avoid provocative actions. Washington says it's deeply concerned about the new round of escalations. Several other countries and groups have also criticized the Israeli attacks. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, says Arab countries' normalization of ties with Tel Aviv was a green light for Israelis to continue their crimes against Palestinians.
It's a green light for the Israeli settlers to go ahead with their crimes against the Palestinians, to go ahead with raiding Al-Aqsa Mosque complex anytime they want. Of course, when the Israeli, when the Israelis and the Israeli settlers watch and see that, let's say, major Arab countries declaring normalization of ties, visiting Israel and holding summits with Israeli officials, then they know that those countries would not be backing and supporting the Palestinians or their cause, even if they say that the Palestinian cause remain as a priority for them. But on ground, it's not anymore, because they preferred the Israeli authorities on the Palestinians. Of course, this is what the Palestinians are saying today. They are left alone. That's why the unity is the most thing needed now. Palestinians are today united, not only for the issue of Al-Aqsa or defending Al-Aqsa Mosque and Al-Quds, but also in the last few days, everyone watched Israeli forces raiding West Bank cities and villages, killing Palestinians in cold blood, and even experts have described these killings as extrajudicial killings, because at the end of the day, the Israeli soldiers know very well that they will not be punished or prosecuted for their crimes against Palestinians.
We've talked to Palestinian journalist and activist Khaled Barkat. This is what he told us about the reason behind Israeli attacks on Palestinians during the holy month of Ramadan.
If you look at why escalation happens, even in previous years, you will see that it is the same reasons where settlers who are fanatic, extremist, racist, colonialist, who comes from New York, London, and Berlin, have, to instigate these issues against Palestinians and against Muslims in the Holy Land of Holy Month of Ramadan. And at the same time, Israel is provoking this not only in Jerusalem, but throughout Palestine. Now, the Palestinian people are aware of these Israeli schemes. They are united against Israel more than ever before.
A senior Yemeni official says the Saudi-led coalition continues to violate the terms of the two-month-long ceasefire by seizing Yemeni-bound fuel ships and obstructing the flights. Yemeni Deputy Foreign Minister Hussein Al-Azzi rejected the United Nations claims that Riyadh is adhering to the truce. He said the UN statements are aimed at concealing the aggression on the part of the Saudi coalition. Yemen had previously stated that it would commit to the truce as long as the other side adheres to it. On April 2nd, a ceasefire was announced by a UN special envoy for Yemen and welcomed by the warring sides. The truce stipulates halting offensive military operations and a siege on Yemen for a period of 2 months. Saudi Arabia launched its devastating war against Yemen in March 2015 in collaboration with a number of its allies. Russia has warned the U.S. of, quote, unpredictable consequences if Washington and its allies continue to send weapons to Ukraine. According to U.S. media reports, Moscow has sent diplomatic notes to Washington and other countries urging them to stop irresponsible militarization of Ukraine. Russia has also accused NATO of trying to force Kyiv to abandon negotiations in order to continue the bloodshed. The warning comes 2 days after the U.S. president announced an additional $800 million in military aid to Ukraine. On Wednesday, Russia warned NATO that it will treat arms shipments to Ukraine as legitimate targets. Moscow says any effort to inflict damage on Russian military will be harshly suppressed. tensions between Russia and Europe over Ukraine show no sign of abating. Moscow has now announced the expulsion of 18 members of the EU mission in a tit-for-tat move. The Russian Foreign Ministry declared the EU's staff persona non grata. The ministry said they must leave Russia in the near future. It also summoned the EU ambassador to hand him a note of protest and blamed the bloc for destroying bilateral ties. The EU has lashed out at Moscow for expelling its diplomats.
The European Union deplores the unjustified, baseless decision of the Russian Federation to expel 18 members of the delegation of the European Union to the Russian Federation.
Earlier this month, the EU declared 19 Russian diplomats persona non grata and ordered them to leave the host nation, Belgium. The bloc accused the Russians of engaging in activities contrary to their diplomatic status. Russia has already said it will respond to all such expulsions. Russia has once again warned Sweden and Finland against their intention to join NATO.
The choice is up to the authorities of Sweden and Finland, but they should understand the consequences of such a step for our bilateral relations and for the architecture of European security as a whole.
Maria Zakharova said the potential membership of Sweden and Finland in NATO will not beef up their national security and enhance their international image. On Thursday, Moscow also warned there can be no more talk of a nuclear-free status for the Baltic if the two countries join the U.S.-led military alliance. Finland said this week it will decide whether to apply for NATO membership within weeks. Sweden is also mulling the matter. Russia stands strongly opposed to NATO's eastward expansion and views it as a security threat. The United Nations says more than 5 million people have fled Ukraine since the start of the Russian special military operation on the 24th of February. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees said over 4.7 million Ukrainian nationals had fled across the borders. And the UN's International Organization for Migration said nearly 250,000 third country nationals had also been forced to leave Ukraine. The figures come after Ukraine said last week that 9 humanitarian corridors had been agreed between Kyiv and Moscow to evacuate people from the besieged eastern regions. According to UN figures, 90% of the refugees are women and children, as the Ukrainian authorities do not allow men of military age to leave the country. Poland hosts the largest number of refugees. CIA Director William Burns has accused China of being a silent partner in what he called Russia's aggression in Ukraine. Burns said China poses the greatest challenge the U.S. intelligence agency has ever faced. He added Chinese President Xi Jinping as a formidable competitor lacking in neither ambition nor capability. Burns made the comments during his first public speech as CIA director. He said it's more a complicated and contested world in light of what he called an adversarial China and revisionist Russia. Ties have soured between the U.S. and China over the past several years, as Beijing has stood up against what it sees as Washington's hegemony. The U.S. says China is helping Russia evade Western sanctions imposed over Ukraine. Beijing denies that. France's second round runoff is on April the 24th, and the media is finally getting serious about comparing the two candidates' records and proposals. Analysts say that unrest in Ukraine may tip the scales in a toss-up race. Rami Mazahiri reports from Paris.
The latest second-round polls in France continue to show that Emmanuel Macron's once comfortable lead has vanished to make the race a dead heat. The mainstream media's insistence on talking about Islamophobia and xenophobia has already produced near-record abstention, but the unrest in Ukraine has forced real issues back to the fore. First, the Great Recession, then the Age of Austerity, then the Yellow Vest Civil War, then the coronavirus era, and now an era of Russian sanctions? Devoted Europhile Macron remains committed to a long-term blockade of Russia, which requires years of economic suffering for the average household. Analysts say that voters may prefer Le Pen's France-first insistence that any Russia sanctions not bankrupt French homes and businesses.
She's a nationalist, and she's protectionist in some way. She's also protective. She has understood that it was important to sound as someone that would be here to take care of electors. It's whether it's for good or bad, but a lot of French people want to feel that they have a protective hand in government.
Le Pen has also promised to pull out of NATO's command center to restore French independence. Macron is relying on a demonization campaign of the National Front, just like in 2017, when the number two reason people voted for Macron was to block them from coming to power.
He is, in a way, a president by default. The number one paradox of this campaign is that, indeed, we've had 5 years of a president who's managed to be disliked by almost everybody and who yet is favorite to be reelected.
Back when he thought victory was assured, Macron promised to raise the retirement age to 65 this fall. That may cost him key older and left-wing votes. He's backtracking and saying that he's now willing to listen to the ideas and desires of voters. Do left-wing voters believe Macron's claims that he's now willing to govern by consensus? Does France view Le Pen differently after 5 years of Macronism? The winning candidate may be the one who proves that they have changed the most since the very different year of 2017. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
The death toll from massive downpours in South Africa has surged to nearly 400 as search and rescue operations continue. Dozens are still believed to be missing, with over 40,000 affected by flooding in and around the eastern coastal city of Durban. Along with the loss of life, infrastructure was also extensively damaged. The busiest port in southern Africa was badly hit. Homes were destroyed while roads and bridges were washed away in landslides. Some residents have been without power or water 5 days after the disaster strike. The South African Weather Service has warned of continuing high winds and rain, bringing the risk of more flooding in the area. The South African president has described the flooding as a catastrophe of enormous proportions, directly linking it to climate change.
Well, that's your world news for now. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, Salam and welcome to the program. It was said in the previous episodes that the philosophy of fasting is to reach God-weariness. God-weariness means taking heed of one's deeds, to do all of them for God's sake. This is, in fact, the program of the life of the faithful. But this program is not limited in personal aspects and includes social affairs too. The fourth infallible successor of the Prophet of Islam, Imam Sajjad, peace upon him, says, in supplication of his sermons book, Sahifeh Sajjadiyeh said, "My Lord, adorn me with the adornment of the righteous and clothe me the costume of the God-weary, the costume for spreading justice, for quenching anger, for putting out the fires that are set among individuals, and for creating unity and friendship among those faithful who have been separated. All the points that Imam Sajjadi, peace upon him, mentions for God-weariness are social issues. Thus, God-weariness is both personal and social. Personal God-weariness will culminate when it leads to social God-weariness. This will help individuals strengthen their faith. Social God-weariness means that society is careful not to disobey God's commands. Spreading justice, quenching enmities, and creation of unity among Muslims are highly recommended in Islam. Personal God-weariness means strengthening the inward against satanic temptations. Social God-weariness means bolstering sciences, industries, technologies, and faith of the society in the face of enemies. A Muslim society should be able to defend against enemies and overcome threats and conspiracies. God has ordained the fasting of Ramadan in order to strengthen God-weariness among the faithful. Recitation of the Quran, fasting, and prayers of this month cause individuals to pay more attention to do's and don'ts and urge them to consider God's satisfaction in their deeds. People in this month deal with each other more fairly and honestly. We should try to keep the achievements of Ramadan and wear the costume of God-weariness for the whole year. Well, in this part of the program, let's see which people are exempted from fasting. Although fasting is obligatory for every wise and mature person, it is not obligatory for some people. For instance, an old person who is too weak to fast should not fast, but he or she should give nearly 750 grams of wheat, barley, or dates to the poor for each day. However, if he or she has not fasted the Ramadan due to weakness, should compensate those days if they are able after Ramadan. A woman whose time of labor is near should not fast if fasting is harmful for her child. She should give 750 grams of wheat, barley, or dates to the poor for each day. Moreover, fasting is not obligatory for her if it harms her health. In both cases, later on, she should fast as compensation for all the days. A nursing woman whose milk is little and is not obliged to fast. She should also give nearly 750 grams of wheat, barley, or dates to the poor for each day. Later on, she should compensate the days that she has broken her fast. A person who is too weak to fast or suffers from excessive thirst is permitted to break his or her fast. Later on, they should fast if they are able. Furthermore, they should give nearly 750 grams of wheat, barley, or dates to the poor for each day of fasting. A traveler who travels more than a specific distance, 22.5 kilometers, and will stay less than 10 days in the destination is not permitted to fast. Imam Ali, peace upon him, describes the blessed month of Ramadan in this way. O people, this is the month which God has made it superior to other months, like the superiority of us, the Ahlul Bayt, to other people. And it is the month in which the gates of the heavens and the gates of mercy are open and the gates of fire are closed. And it is the month in which the call is heard and the prayer is answered and crying is received with mercy. It is the month in which there is a night wherein the angels descend by the leave of their Lord from the sky to the fasting men and women with greetings till dawn. It is the night of Qadr, 2,000 years before the creation of Adam, peace upon him. My wilaya was ordained in that night. Fasting in it is better than fasting for 1,000 months, and an act of worship in it is better than 1,000 months. O people, the sun of Ramadan shines on the fasting men and women with mercy, and it this month emits light over them with mercy. There is no day or night in this month except that Almighty God pours goodness in it over this Ummah. Therefore, anyone who enjoys a bit of the rainfall of divine blessing, he will be glorified on the day of meeting God. And no servant will be glorified with God except that God will place him in paradise. Imam Ali, peace upon him, would emphasize on recitation and practicing the Quran in the month of Ramadan. Recitation of the Quran is always good, but the month of Ramadan and the night of Qadr are very suitable for this purpose. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, "Take heed of Allah. Take heed of Allah about the Quran, lest others go ahead of you in practicing it." He says elsewhere, "The appearance of the Qur'an is guidance and salvation from hell. If you practice its apparent instructions, you will be forgiven and graced by God, and God will fulfill what He has promised. But the inward of the Qur'an pumps the blood which informs of the eternal life. If a person's organs get this blood, they will always be healthy and lively."
Food for thought.
Salam, and let us begin the day by reflecting on a supplication in the Divine Course taught to us by Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, the 16th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. O Allah, Lord of the month of Ramadan and revealer of the Quran, this is the month of Ramadan in which you sent down the Quran and sent down in it manifest proofs of guidance and the criterion. O Allah, assist me to carry out its fasting and devotions. Deliver to us intact. Keep us sound and healthy during it, and receive it intact from us in ease and well-being from you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the fasting of the month of Ramadan is an important pillar of
إنما سمي رمضان لأنه يرمض الذنوب.
Verily, the month of Ramadan has been thus named because it scorches away sins.
What does Maah Ramadan mean to us?
This is Dialogue, a program on the holy month of Ramadan and the importance of fasting. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program. This is Dialogue. We're talking about the blessed and holy month of Ramadan. The holy month of Ramadan, as you all know, is the blessed and honorable month when the doors of the Almighty Allah's mercy are open. It is the blessed month when forgiveness is easy to gain, but only if we take our steps in this direction. The holy month of Ramadan, the great month when the doors of hell are closed, a beautiful, a blessed, an honorable month, a month where we return towards the Almighty Allah. The holy month of Ramadan, a month where we gain our provisions for our journey towards the hereafter. The holy month of Ramadan, where we establish a connection with our loving, nurturing Lord, our Creator and Sustainer, Allah, exalted and glorified is He. The holy month of Ramadan, the greatest of months, the most honorable of months, this month in which we can return towards Allah, this month in which we can reconnect with Allah, this month in which we can gain the provisions for the hereafter, this the holy month of Ramadan.
قال الإمام الصادق عليه السلام من وصيته لولده عند دخول شهر رمضان: فاجهدوا أنفسكم فإن فيه تقسم الأرزاق وتكتب الآجال وفيه يكتب وفد الله الذين يفدون إليه وفيه ليلة العمل فيها خير من العمل في ألف شهر.
Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, in his advice to his children heralding the advent of the month of Ramadan, said, "Exert yourselves in doing good deeds, for verily in this month sustenance is appointed, life spans are destined, the names of Allah's select servants who wish to strive towards Him are recorded down, and in this month is a night wherein the good deeds performed equal the deeds of 1,000 of months."
Welcome back to your listeners. It's great to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio, and we're talking about the holy month of Ramadan. Dear friends, dear fasters, in this holy month of Ramadan, this blessed and beautiful opportunity that the Almighty Allah has given us to create a new life for ourselves, to create a better life for ourselves, this holy month of Ramadan really passes by so very quickly. So please do your best to take full advantage of this divine opportunity that has been given to every single one of us. Now, dear friends, there are different levels of fasting. These levels of fasting, it is important for us to know them, because when we know these levels of fasting, then we can move ourselves from one level of fasting to the next level of fasting. We find in the traditions of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household and the divinely appointed imams, where they say in the traditions that the fasting of the general population is that of abstaining, refraining from eating and drinking and relations with their spouses. And then they say that there is a more noble type of fasting, which is the second level or a higher level of fasting, that along with the abstinence and refraining from the items which breaks one's fast, it becomes necessary to also abstain and refrain from sin. So the first level is to refrain from those things which break the fast, such as eating and drinking and the various other things. The next higher level of fasting is, along with abstaining from these things, we abstain from sin as well. And finally, the third and highest level of fasting is for the noblest of the noble, and that is that you not only abstain from things which break your fast, and you not only abstain from committing sin, but you also empty your heart from everything but Allah. And so fasting can, if you try, and with the help of Allah, fasting can make people not only like angels, but even better than angels. This is Dialogue, the Holy Month of Ramadan.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Let me just talk about the purpose according to Quran when it comes to the issue of fasting. That basically when we go through this process of fasting for 29 or 30 days, it has less to do with the physical fitness or losing a few pounds at the end of the month. And it has everything to do with the issue of spiritual fitness. If you look at the ayat of Quran in Surah Baqarah, ayat number 183 to ayat number 187, this is the passage where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has revealed the order as well as the rules about the basic rulings about fasting. It's very interesting to look at the first and the last ayat in that passage. The very first ayat basically is a command. Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu kutiba alaykum as-siyam kama kutiba alal ladhina min qablikum la'allakum tattaqun. That this first ayat ends with these two words, la'allakum tattaqun, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, hopefully you will acquire taqwa. You know, awareness of Allah's, you know, conscience of Allah's presence in our life all the time. The last ayat, you know, ends by saying that tilka hududullah fala taqrabuha. The rules, you know, mentioned about fasting, these are the limits that Allah has put there, and do not violate them. Kavalika yubayyinullah ayatihi linnas. This is how Allah explains his rulings to the people. And the passage now ends, that whole section, la'allahum yattaqoon. The first one ends with the words la'allakum tattaqoon. The last one ends with the words لَعَلَّهُمْ يَتَّقُونَ. And this is where we see the emphasis is there in the beginning and the end, that the ultimate goal of fasting should be that we acquire taqwa.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
A startup in the U.S. state of California is turning science fiction into reality by sending tiny robots on a fantastic voyage inside humans to treat brain disorders. The smart cells are small enough to be injected and can be carefully guided through the brain using magnetic coils placed outside of the patient's skull. The coils are linked to a computer that can remotely maneuver the robots through delicate pathways into the affected part of the brain. The micro-robots are also removed by rewinding them through the same route. The developers at Bionaut Labs say these robots are extremely important when it comes to zero-failure-sensitive surgeries.
For localized conditions such as cancer tumors, stroke, atherosclerotic plaque buildup, localized pain, and many other conditions, there is a real need to have a microrobotic, precise, remote-controlled mechanism that can treat a condition only at a specific point and nowhere else.
The startup has already tested the robots on large animals. Inventors hope to use the robot to pierce fluid-filled cysts within the brain when clinical trials on humans begin in 2 years. If approved, they could offer key advantages over more invasive and dangerous treatments for brain disorders. Floating solar panels help landowners benefit from underused body of water. Now, a German company is covering 14,000 square meters of a lake with these panels, turning it into the biggest solar park in the country. The park is built by a family-owned company called Quartzwerk, which specializes in extracting and processing industrial minerals. The company says it wants to become independent of fossil energy sources amid rising energy prices. The head of the Floating Panel Corporation says they will be generating around 3 million kilowatts per hour of green electricity on the surfaces of Limmersheim Lake in southern Germany.
The
plant can make a super big contribution to the land-neutral energy transition, because here an unused lake that was previously used for gravel extraction is being converted into a power plant for renewable energy.
Installation and maintenance of the panels are easy and safe, while they also offer a significant reduction in evaporation from the water surface. According to the company, this will save around 1,100 tons of carbon dioxide each year.
A restaurant in the Indonesian capital of Jakarta is taking fine dining to new heights, literally and figuratively, by giving diners a one-of-a-kind experience 50 meters above ground. The restaurant is called Lounge in the Sky. Diners are securely strapped into seats fixed to a table and are hoisted into the air using a heavy-duty lift. First, the gourmet meals are prepared in the main kitchen. Then the food is loaded onto the platform where the dishes are plated and served to the patrons. The suspended guests are able to take advantage of breathtaking views as they gently rotate at great heights.
At first, it was not easy. I was nervous that I wouldn't be able to swallow the food, let alone drink. But after some time, I could eventually eat. It was thrilling.
While enjoying the meals, the guests use seat belts and the accompanying staff are equipped with safety harnesses. The guests are also briefed on safety regulations before the platform is raised. Diners call the one-hour experience exhilarating and worth the high price. The project developers say the restaurant was aimed at reviving local and international tourism sector after a big slump during the COVID-19 pandemic. The culinary experience is a first in Indonesia and the third in the world after Belgium and Malaysia.
South Koreans are getting outside to enjoy the open air with a local cherry blossom festival in central Seoul. This is while the country has been dealing with an ongoing surge of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. With some performances and the beauty of spring, many people look forward to turning the corner on the pandemic. Frank Smith has a story.
Spring has come to South Korea, and the cherry blossoms are blooming. COVID-19 restrictions on gatherings are finally being eased, and at Ansan Park in central Seoul, a small festival is bringing everyone back out.
I first came here with my friends 4 years ago, but we couldn't come for the past 2 years because of COVID. I was impressed to see so many people no longer being overly careful about COVID, and we're also very happy to be able to attend festivals like this one.
South Koreans have been quite diligent in observing social distancing guidelines and wearing masks. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 has been quite severe here, with cases only recently declining below 200,000 per day. Still, the government's decided to open up. From the open-air stage, Noh Ah Ram and his band entertain a crowd that's anxious to finally get outside and enjoy group activities.
Ever since COVID, and particularly for the entirety of 2021, when the pandemic was at its peak, I have been unable to perform. I felt today was a restart. Spring has come, the weather's great, the blossoms beautiful, and I felt all of this was celebrating today's show.
South Korea's vaccination rate is nearly 90%, with children now getting the jab.
At first, I was very scared of COVID as I felt it was life-threatening. But now I feel okay with it because I consider it an experience and a certain reality. Also, I worry less because of the vaccines and the new medications.
The cherry blossoms blooming has been tracked from Jeju Island in the south and up to the capital as warm weather moved north. And with this change in seasons, attitudes toward life with COVID are changing as well. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The first all-private space crew has successfully docked at International Space Station after spending over 20 hours en route. Three paying customers and a former NASA astronaut will spend 10 days aboard the ISS. The tourists will participate in scientific research, including stem cell experiments and exploring how the body ages in space. The civilian crew were launched into space in a SpaceX rocket from the Kennedy Space Center on Friday. The trip was brokered by Axiom Space, which is the U.S.-based startup that coordinates rocket rides and provides necessary training. It's not the first time paying customers have visited the ISS. Russia sold seats on a Soyuz spacecraft last year. But this is the first mission that includes a crew entirely comprised of civilians.
The light
is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A new selfie museum in Sweden is flipping the script by making visitors both the artist and the exhibit. The establishment is dubbed the Museum and is in a shopping mall in Stockholm. Unlike other selfie museums, this one has no works of art on its walls. Instead, its brightly decorated rooms are meant to serve as fun backgrounds for visitors to take their selfies or shoot videos in. Other rooms let the visitors bury themselves in candy-colored foam bricks, strike a pose under neon lights, or sit on a huge, colorful swing. The manager says the museum is interactive and lets the visitors be the artists themselves in order to create the art they want to see. The Drone Show Korea 2022 has been held at the Busan Exhibition and Convention Center, BEXCO. It featured 137 companies and 533 booths, making this year's incarnation the largest in the show's six-year history. The event also featured the participation of a large international industry representatives from Japan and Western Europe. A highlight of this year's event was military technology centered around the unveiling of new indigenous UAVs. This year's show marked a long-endurance liquid hydrogen drone produced by a South Korean company. These developments reflect South Korea's attempt to improve resilience and revolutionize its approach to warfare. The event puts on display the importance of drone industry in various spheres, including defense purposes. More than 163 wildlife species have been released back into lagoons and forests in Colombia's Casanare province after being seized and rehabilitated by authorities fighting wildlife trafficking. These include 15 different species such as anteaters, turtles, macaws, a toucan, and a leopard. They were nurtured back to health by fauna vets from an environmental authority in charge of managing sustainable development. The authority, Corporinoquia, released more than 1,200 animals back into the wild in 2021 alone. Colombia is one of the world's most biodiverse countries by square kilometer and is home to some 10% of the world's flora and fauna.
A super rare birth has added a cute member to critically endangered Sumatran rhinos of Indonesia. The newborn calf is the sixth born since intensive efforts to breed the species began in the 1980s. The female calf, which doesn't have a name yet, was given birth to by a rhino named Rosa in a sanctuary. Rosa has suffered 8 miscarriages since 2005 when she was brought in from the wild for a breeding program. Fewer than 80 Sumatran rhinos remain in the world, mainly on the Indonesian islands of Sumatra and Borneo. Excessive poaching along with other threats has brought the species to the brink of extinction.
With neon lights on the floor and walls, pulsing electronic beats, and a glowing red shuttlecock bouncing back and forth, Malaysian badminton court evokes a sci-fi movie set. Shuttle in the Dark is a badminton hall in the iconic Petronas Twin Towers in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. It was set up in late 2021 by a sport management company to encourage people to take up the racket sport after 2 years of social restrictions because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Director of INEC Sport Management says the initial goal was to draw sports fans and players back into action.
Our initial goal was how can we encourage and gain back the interest of people to come back and play. And not only those enthusiasts, but then as well the new people who was not able to or never played badminton before. So that's why we come out with this experience called Shuttle in the Dark.
Playing on a futuristic court presents an unusual challenge for athletes as they have to adjust their eyes to the darkness to fly. Badminton is one of the most popular sports in Malaysia and Asia, with a thriving community in the Southeast Asian community. It has produced some of the world's top-ranked players. A zoo in Ireland's capital, Dublin, has unveiled its newest habitat called the Himalayan Hills, a brand new home of the red panda and snow leopard. Visitors are able to see the red panda's habitat by traveling along the new trail around a rocky edge to an open viewing area. The red pandas are typically climbing, exploring, or munching on bamboo at the top of broad-leafed evergreen trees. The expanded habitat was designed with a red panda's tree-dwelling lifestyle in mind. Also, visitors can gaze up at the 15-meter rocky slope through an impressive panoramic viewing area to spot the snow leopards. These elusive felines are typically nocturnal, so catching a glimpse of one is a rare treat.
Yeah, the animals are settling in well. We've tried to recreate the wild habitats in the Himalayan hills. Both species live quite high up. In case of the snow leopards, up to 5,000 meters on these very steep rocky slopes, which you can see here in the habitat as well. We've tried to use the topology of Dublin Zoo.
The project took a few years to complete. It was halted in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic and massive budget shortages, but was restarted after government funding in 2021. The zoo is part of a protection project for red pandas and snow leopards. These animals are listed as vulnerable due to threats from poaching and severe habitat loss.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.